Hello and welcome back to the Jessica Pennelly podcast. I'm Jess, your host and your favorite female empowerment coach. This is a safe space to speak about all things on mindset, relationships, business, sex, money, and life experiences. Get comfortable, get ready, and let's go. Good morning from Australia, Malika. Welcome to the Jessica Pennelly podcast. I'm so excited to have you on here. How are you?
I am doing fabulous. I am doing really good, actually.
Amazing. Why don't you tell everyone, all of the listeners, who are you? What do you do? Where are you from? And What are you sharing when you're coming on to the podcast?
Yeah. So again, I am Malika Wiley. I actually am a licensed marriage and family therapist and relationship coach. So I've been a marriage and family therapist for the last 13 years. I currently am in Texas, but I'm about to be an East Coast girly here in about a couple of months. And I really just wanted to come on and provide like a safe space just to talk about relationships, communication, all the things that make us who we are, especially if we want to have like amazing relationships, which I feel like we all do, right? And so, I'm excited to be here.
So what made you, so you've been a licensed marriage and family therapist for 13 years. That's a big chunk of time. Where did you fall into this? Why did you choose this?
So at first I wanted to be an OBGYN. So in college, I was like dead set. I'm going to be a doctor. I'm going to deliver babies. And I realized that was not the lifestyle that I wanted to have. One, I also took organic chemistry and realized that is not the path for me. But I started to just, you know, I went to the University of Kansas, but I was really intrigued with all the psychological classes and really understanding the mind and the body and how we are in relationships. And so that's kind of how I started that shift. And then my focus was marriage and family because I really liked the couple dynamics. And then if I keep fast forwarding it, I landed my first job, my big girl job at the Department of Veteran Affairs. And so I got to work with our nation's veterans for 8.5 years, like providing services for them. So it's been a whirlwind and an exciting career so far.
Very exciting. So what attracted you to want to work with couples the most and it within marriages?
I feel like sometimes when we are just talking to one individual, it's only their perception that we're seeing. And I'm all about, I don't feel like we need to be in therapy forever to like live our best life. So like, let's get in, get some great tools, process what we need to, and then move on in life. And of course, doing check-ins when we need to. But I'm like, I can hold space for this. Conflict does not scare me. Let's lean into it. And so I'm like, bring your partner in, bring your wife, bring your kids, bring everybody can come to therapy. So, I just like the duality of them both being there and those moments. I feel like for other couples therapists or those that work with couples, it's like that moment when the light bulb starts to go off and there's a softening that happens in the room where they're like, man, I see you. I feel seen. I feel heard. It's those moments where I'm like, I love what I do. I love what I do.
You said something interesting, that conflict doesn't scare you. I feel like that's a powerful statement because even when I have conversations with my clients, conversations with my friends around relationships, both romantic, platonic, and family, I feel like one of the biggest things is I don't want to bring it up because I don't like conflict. I don't like conflict. Yeah. It scares me. It makes me feel weird. So for you to say that, I love it. It's a powerful statement, but how did you get there?
I stumbled upon it. I feel like I had some really great mentors throughout my training as a clinician who really challenged me to be able to sit in the conflict. Cause it's like, if I can't sit in the conflict with my clients, I will never be able to move them through it because we get stuck in our comfort zone and it's okay. And we sweep things under the rug or we act like it doesn't exist, but that just perpetuates perpetuates us staying in this cycle. So it's like we have to build some level of tolerance. And so I also my professor was like, I think you should do one of your internships at the Lansing Maximum Security Prison. And so that's what I did. And so which was an eye-opening experience. And I was like, oh yeah, if I can work with these inmates and I can work with anybody. And if I can work with veterans, I can work with anyone. And so I'm like, yeah, let's sit in it.
Wow. What an experience. How long were you working there for? And what were the biggest takeaways for you and with that type of dynamic?
Yeah. So I was an intern, in my master's program. And so I was there, maybe I want to say a year and a half. The biggest takeaway is, my privilege of being able to like be in certain situations or have certain privileges in life. My parents were in the military. They were officers in the military, and just the ability to have a mom who would validate my emotions is a privilege. The ability to have my mom and dad in the household. Another takeaway I took was not to judge a book by its cover. And so I really tried to practice like that humility, because once I heard their stories, why they were in there, I'm like, man, they're just humans. Right. And I appreciate the program was called Brothers in Blue. I have no idea if it's still going on, but I really like the mentorship and the leaders and the inmates that I got to I work with when I was a baby clinician or a baby intern. So yeah, it was definitely the perfect time for me to do that at the start of my career.
And everything happens in perfect divine timing, right? I want to highlight what you said about you realized your privilege and watching, I guess, your parents. I'm going to assume they were together the entire time you were growing up. Yep.
They were. It wasn't the best. They're not together now, but they were together. So there's that, I like to say the cheat code sometimes of having two household incomes, having two individuals there. So yeah.
And how much do you think, I think, you know, there's obviously become a lot on the internet over the past couple of years of people learning and having access more than ever now to understanding their trauma, whatever degree that may be. And so the level of trauma, I guess, we pick up from our parents, primary caregivers, how much do you see that actually affect people and your clients? But also, do you have clients that don't even realize, wow, I actually picked this up from my mom or my dad, or this is why I am the way I am?
Yeah, I feel like we all do, right? Like if we think about just these primitive times in our years when we're learning, developing, it kind of shapes the framework of how we see the world, see ourselves. And so I definitely feel like that's let me say this. I feel like subconsciously it's going on, but I don't know if it resonates with as many individuals cognitively and consciously what's going on. And so I guess I'll take myself for an example of, I realized as I was going through my journey of becoming a marriage and family therapist, after I left the VA, I started my own practice. And in that, that's where I also realized, oh, like the way my mind works, the way I want to conduct business, the way I think of just certain things in my life, I'm like, this is definitely rooted from like how my mom was, very direct to the point, but also like nurturing, but, can tend to overhelp. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm a people pleaser. And so recognizing some of those things, bringing them to the surface so that I could work with them, I think has been beneficial. And I try to do the same with my clients, not leading them too fast into it, because I definitely can see like, oh, this is some childhood trauma. But if they're not ready for it, I'm not like, girl, let's talk about this right now, right? I kind of hold their hand.
That's interesting. Okay, so even though you can, as a therapist, recognize, all right, I know this is stemming from your childhood trauma, I know this is stemming from your mom or your dad, where's the balance in between not leading them straight there and allowing them to kind of get there by themselves?
I think it's with, again, the ability to handle conflict or uncomfortability. And so I'm really mindful of the questions that I ask and allowing that room for uncomfortability to happen. So if I say, I'm curious, why do you do that? And they're like, I just do it because I do, you know, but I'm like, where did you learn that? And we sit in it. Whose voice is that? Is that your voice? And maybe they'll be like, actually, that's my grandma's voice. And I'm like, do you want it to be that loud? Like, where's your voice in all of this? And so it's like asking those questions to where they're usually sometimes like, damn, Malika, you're good. I don't know. Let me think on that. I'm like, yeah. So what are you going to do to make sure you think about it? Like, are you going to write it down? Like, because we know when you leave this office, avoidance might kick in. You're going to be like, let me get on Instagram. Let me do this. And so that's a practice that I've had to learn, because if I look at my own course, being a clinician, I would get so excited when someone had a little breakthrough that I would be like, let's rip open the present and handle it. And then I realized they would just like shut down. And so being able to provide that space, but also validation of, we don't have to unpack all of this right now. Like, let's just scratch the surface. That's literally okay. At least we're scratching the surface, besides acting as though that surface doesn't exist, but it plays a huge role in our life. So
two big things I took away from that I absolutely love: asking whose voice is this and allowing yourself to get really curious, but also the second question you ask of, do you want it to be that loud? Now, if someone's listening, man or woman, and they're thinking, all right, this is starting to get me to think, maybe that is my mom's voice, or maybe that is my dad's voice. I have no idea how to not leave listening this to this podcast episode and start to work through that, rather than scrolling on TikTok or going on Instagram, or maybe, you know, been spending their money. So what are the things, what are the steps that you would give people that are like, all right, those voices, they're pretty loud. That's my mom from when I was a teenager, but I don't know what to do in this moment to disconnect or to, I guess, even grant ourselves a little bit of grace, because it can be overwhelming. I agree. When we figure out, wow, that's actually not me that have picked up all these beliefs. Where would we start?
I would start with, I love the word that you said, grace. I would start with giving yourself grace, but then also adding in that excitement. Like, I want you to get so excited that, oh my gosh, in this moment, I just realized that this is someone else's voice. I feel like there's this freedom that comes with that. Like, if we sit in like the excitement of, I can do something about it. So I'm like, that's, I would say, step one. Step two, I'm all about externalizing. And so and what I mean by that is taking a moment, whether it's in your phone or if you have a certain notebook, but write out those thoughts, like verbatim, word by word, and then in parentheses, put mom, write out the other thought, in parentheses, put dad or whomever it is. That way you can look at it and you realize, this isn't me. So I have choice. What do I want to tell myself? And I guess that would be part three, would be, if you're following along, on the left-hand side of your paper, maybe you have their voice. And on the right-hand side, what is the voice that you want to have? Who is your, not who is, but what is your voice? What is that saying? And if you happen to be in therapy, or you have a coach, or you have a friend, this is where I'm like, take that to them, because our friends sometimes, I feel like, speak to us the way that we need to hear, right? Like, my girlfriends are so sweet to me, and vice versa. Like, they'll help me challenge my own thoughts about myself. And so if someone's looking for a three-part system, I'm like, that's the first thing that came to my mind, that I was like, I would do that.
I love that. And I think it's very tangible. It's very simple. Now, just to kind of like push into a little bit, because I can hear there's probably going to be listeners go, okay, that's all well and good, so I'll write this down. And then what do I do? What's the next step? How do I start to unpack that? Or how do I start to come back to myself and back to my own voice? What if I don't even know what my own voice is? Because you know, I've definitely been in places in my current relationship that I have where I've realized, okay, this is, I'm actually acting like my mum right now. And I've kind of been like, but I don't know what I would actually say or what I would do or what is my actual belief system. How do we explore what's us, what's someone else?
I would say on that one, getting into your body. Well, my mind is going everywhere right now, right? But I would say getting into your body. What I mean by that is if you write down a thought or you're going through it, like you said, how does that feel on you? Like, is your heart rate increasing? Does that make you anxious? Does that make you nervous? Is your palms, like your hands starting to get sweaty? Maybe you notice that you start playing with your hair a little more. Like, what is going on? And to go even deeper, that's where I would say being willing to ask yourself those questions, but be gentle with yourself. That looks like being willing to get curious. Sometimes if my clients get stuck, I'm like, let's change our words. Instead of saying, why am I like this? Because that takes us to the past. Let's just say, how am I going to handle it now that I know that it came up? I feel like that keeps us more in like the present, right? Versus like, why am I like this? Why am I acting like my mom right now? Why am I acting, right? It takes us outward versus I realize that I'm acting like my mom right now. How do I want to respond? What feels good to me? And if you don't know, this is where I'm like, let's note that of like, it's okay that you don't know, but how are you going to respond? Because you're going to respond some type of way, but does it align with who you want to be? And if someone's like, I don't know who I want to be, then I'm like, baby girl, well, let's start there of writing down, like, who do you want to be? Like, let's close our eyes and who do you imagine being? How do you imagine? Let's go into dreamland for a moment of like, what would you be doing? How would you respond? And then go to the present moment. So I hope listeners are able to follow my metaphors. But
do you think that people struggle to take themselves into some form of dreamland and go, oh, that actually could be me, or I could be that type of person?
I do. I think primarily, and it doesn't fit for all, it's because we are sometimes the biggest blocks in our own life, right? And I think it's hard to like swallow that and hear that and be like, no, I'm not. Do you see the things that I've accomplished and et cetera? And I'm like, I get that. I see that. And at the same time, I feel like it's scary going into dreamland. It's scary to think about how we could be different. It's uncomfortable. And so as much as we don't like the situation that we're in, it's predictable and it's safe and we know what to expect. That's why we stay in relationships that aren't healthy for us, because it's like, well, I know if he or she drinks, then I do this and then they go to bed and then I'm okay, versus thinking, what would life look like outside of this relationship? And so that's where I do give that grace and honor of like, we don't have to like jump too far in the future. We don't have to jump too far in the past. But if you are sick and tired of being sick and tired, you have to make some type of movement, even if it's a footstep towards a direction that you want to go in.
Yeah, I love that. Do you think that, I'll go back even further. On the weekend, I watched a TikTok and it was two girls and they were, it was like a lighthearted thing, but I was like, oh, this is an interesting TikTok. And they basically were speaking and saying things our exes did, but we still stayed for years. And they were laughing about, oh, you know, I bought my own birthday presents and I pretended they were from him on social media, or, you know, all these types of things. And I always like to go into the comments on TikTok and see what the collective is saying or what's happening. Yeah. And, you know, it seemed like, and this had a lot of traction, this TikTok, it seemed like it was quite a collective experience. And for women, and I'm sure, again, for listeners, I'm sure men go through this, but from this perspective, women were all going through the same thing or saying, oh, that doesn't make my ex seem too bad. Maybe I should go back from him. From there, one of the biggest themes that I see is the lack of self-worth. And something I also see with my friends, I've experienced myself when it comes to relationships, staying in relationships that aren't serving you or attracting in those relationships. So what are the things that you have maybe seen for women to start to practice their self-worth, whether they're listening right now and they're single or whether they are in a relationship that they may think, am I letting things slide? Is this really the best it can be? But are really struggling with a lack of self-worth and self-belief in who they are and what they deserve.
Yeah, that is a great question. Because my first thought was going to like rattle off like taking care of yourself and things like that. But if I'm like, honestly, if we cut through that, it is first like truly understanding what is self-worth. Like if we are trying to get to this thing of self-worth, like how are we measuring that? Like, what does that look like? And so, and I don't have like the perfect answer for that one, but I would say to the listeners, do some research. I feel like we are the experts of our life. I tell my clients all the time, I might ask good questions. I have some great theoretical backgrounds that shape my questioning and how I work with clients, but you are the expert of your life. With that being said, I am curious, what does self-worth mean to them? In my mind, I'm like, what are your boundaries? What are you willing and not willing to put up with? When you wake up, how do you see yourself? Like, do you like yourself? Sometimes, now what I'm about to say, do not just run to the bathroom and do this. But when I'm working with my female clients with coaching, because I just solely coach women, we do something called like the mirror work, where I'm like, I want you to look in the mirror. Again, I don't do this the first session, but they look in the mirror and I want them to just stare at themselves and see what thoughts come up, what feelings come up, what are we trying to like run away from? What are we like? And this empowering thing can happen because then they'll come back and report to me. And then I'll tell them, all right, I want you to do the same thing. Please believe me, do the same thing. But this time I want you to stand in like a superwoman pose, like your posture matters. And then I'm curious, what voices come up? What do you hear? What do you feel? And sometimes just doing that can give you your own parameters of your measurements so that I'm not measuring myself to you or vice versa. So I have never said that out to the collective. So if everyone's doing this and the mirror work and they're like, Malika, all this stuff came up, I'm like, please, please don't just go and do it. Take care of yourself. So I've never said that out loud, only to clients. And I'm like, we'll see how it goes.
But no, I love that. I think it's a good tip. But yeah, with a disclaimer on there. I just kind of want to go back as well to what you said about with your friends and your girlfriends, the way they speak to you. And it's true. You know, I think I turned 31 this year and I was actually reflecting on my friendships a couple months ago. And I was like, you know what? I have such a good group of girlfriends around me who are very honest, but also very sweet, and who treat me really, really well. What I want to say of that is, how do we create these honest conversations? I feel like me and all my friends are very honest with each other. We can be very loving. We can also understand, do you need tough love or do you need sympathy right now? What is it? How do we kind of create those boundaries within friendships and relationships to have that honesty? Because I think that is so important. I think sometimes it can be really easy to just go with the flow with friends and just agree with them or like entertain. I know when I was in my earlier 20s, we'd all entertain the toxicity of any relationship. But I think it's like, what's the important things to look for in friendships and the boundaries to set and the conversations to have? Like, I love you, but maybe you should think about what's happening right now in your life.
Yes. Where to begin? First, I love that you said that you ask your friends, do you want like some tough love right now? Or do you want me to just like listen to you? I feel like in my own personal life, that is something that I struggled with because I personally would like you, I would keep people in my life. And I'm like, man, you're not really serving me, but you're here. Mm. And that loyalty piece, right? So I guess it's the military background, my parent, like them being in the military, but it's like, I leave no one behind type of mentality that I had. So I promise I'm going to get to the point. I feel like in realizing the type of woman that I wanted to be, the type of woman I wanted to be surrounded with, I got really mindful and intentional with the female relationships that I continue to nourish and the ones where I was like, man, I really care about you, but being around you hurts me. And I don't feel like you have my best interests at heart the way that I do for you. And so letting those relationships go or cutting some relationships off, I feel like has been one of the most rewarding things I have done. I ended a whole like partnership in a business because I was just like, we no longer, I wish you well, I care about you, but we no longer align at that level of what I am wanting in my life, which is genuine female connections. That space where it's like, I want my friends to be able to lovingly call me out where they're like, Malika, your man is right. Like X, Y, and Z. And I think that is something that you should look at. But I'm also in a space where I'm like, yeah, let me hear that. Right. Mm. And so, yeah.
Do you think there needs to be a level of work the individual does to be able, because I'm similar to that. I'm very receptive. If my friends are like, okay, why don't you just think about this other side for a moment? I'm like, okay, I will. It hurts my ego a little bit that you're saying that, mm-hmm. but I will. Mm-hmm. However, to play devil's advocate, say this to me when I was like 24, it's like, no, I'm in the right. I'm not wrong. What do you mean you're taking my man's side? Like, you know, so do you think there needs to be a level of self-work in a development to be able to be that receptive? Do you think it's more of an emotional maturity thing, an age thing? What do you think?
I definitely would say it's a combination of emotional maturity mm-hmm. and where you are at in your life. I wouldn't say an age thing because I have met and connected with some 23-year-olds and I was like, girl, because I just turned 38 and I'm like, you are so mature and like you have your head on straight and oh my goodness, me at 23, ooh. If you knew me then, I apologize. No, but the emotional maturity, and I feel like the way we go about saying things, right? And so if someone, so let's just say you're in your 20s or your early 30s, and you're like, okay, how do I say this to my friend? I'm like, how can you let them know in a loving, kind way? That you care about them and maybe their behavior is impacting you. But I feel like a mature individual isn't going to just blurt that out. We're going to take the time to process that ourselves to see what am I trying to say? Because I know that it's going to have an impact on my friend. So I can say it in a way that still cherishes our relationship without just coming up and saying something. I'm trying to think of the word, just being reactional. Right. Mm. And so I think that takes that emotional maturity to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Which is the self-work.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I like that perception is like, how is this going to impact my friend? And I think that mm-hmm. comes in the way you're delivering it and the way you're saying it and your intention behind it as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. I really like that. Now I just want to shift gears a little bit back to relationships, okay. romantic relationships, marriages. What do you think is like the number one thing that is the biggest threat to marriages, romantic relationships?
I would say the number one threat is the inability to make repair. If you like taking ownership of our own actions, I feel like ego, like we mentioned a little, gets in the way, but our inability to make repairs, I like to draw out for my couples. It's like a little crack in the foundation. And the more we don't repair it, the crack gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And then you're like, why am I even here? Mm. Why am I still even in this relationship? And so what I found, which is one of the reasons why I'm still a couples therapist, but I love doing the coaching part, is because with couples, They'll wait on average like 3 to 5 years before a problem gets really big before they come in. At
Wow,
that time,
really?
doing a lot of, yes.
Three to
with,
five
at that time,
years.
Like staying in this rut, right? Because it takes two people to come to couples, right? And so maybe one partner isn't ready, willing, able, their schedules don't align. One is like, you're the problem. No, you're the problem. And so there's a lot of dissonance that goes on. And then when you come to therapy, it's like we're sifting through that as well as trying to build this relationship. Where I've noticed with coaching, and I coach high achieving women, like create the marriages of their dreams, and they're coming in and they'll have relational problems, but they are in the sense of like their resentment. I started measuring their resentment that they have towards their partner, and it's there, but let's just say it's at 40%. Where here, when they're answering the question, it's like, oh yeah, I resent them. And so being able on this one to teach them to make repair quickly and how to handle repair, how to do that. Because sometimes I'll just say for us women, it's a little harder for us to apologize. There's a whole thread about it. Like, what? Say sorry. And so, but yes, that's the number one thread.
Okay. So many questions. First one, why do you think it, and I agree with you, and I can say this for myself. Why do you think it's so harder for women to say sorry? Because I agree. I'm definitely one. I'm like, I can see the problem. And I can see I'm definitely part of this problem if it's an issue. But I'm like, oh, saying sorry. I like feel it in my heart. I'm like, that's a big step.
Right? Okay. So this is just a thought. So there's no, I have not like deep dived into having research to support this hypothesis of mine. But I feel like society lets us off the hook a lot, right? Like us as women, and I love us. And I feel like sometimes society lets us off the hook because we can pout, we get our way. And not so much, I don't feel like the majority of us are like out, like we're about to be manipulative, but I feel like it's just that way of being, and we're used to, an apology being given to us. I remember my boyfriend, something I'd shared with him. I said, I'm not used to having to apologize. Like this feels uncomfortable for me. And in my own work, I realized sometimes I know that he's a man and he's a human, but my own beliefs about how he should act and how I should act were a little skewed, right? Like I can be a little irrational and be like, okay, first of all, blah, 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 blah. But if he did that, I'm like, you hurt my feelings.
Yes.
And he's like, girl, I have feelings too. And I'm like, oh yeah, you are human. You do have. And so, yeah, there's no science behind it, but that's just my.
I agree. I think, yes, society has kind of given us this space to make us believe it's okay to do that. And when you said that, I really, really resonate because I'm like, it's so true. And the same reaction, it's like, I can be, you know, you can say something, the woman can say something and it's okay. And then they say one thing and it's like, oh, how dare you? Yeah. That's like, why would you treat me like that? So I think it's interesting to think of the perspective, but I do agree. I think society has allowed women to step into that belief system. Do you think that's going to always be the way? Do you see us as women getting better at this? Or do you think it's only if we, you know, if we're in a couple doing the work, going to therapy, is that the only way to fix it?
I don't think that's the only way to fix it, but I do feel like it's shifting and changing, maybe on what I see on social media or my algorithm now. But I love seeing these couple Instagram pages, or just like finding your page where you were, I would classify like you were just aware, right? And not only aware, but it sounds like also putting in the work and doing the work to realize, oh, my ego might get in the way, or how do I want to communicate to my partner in a way where we're both connected? And I feel like the more we are grounded in who we are and the women that we want to be are going back to that dream world where I'm like, Malika, how do you want to show up? How do you want to provide a safe space for your man to have his emotions and remember that he's a human and remember that you both are worthy to have a space that is safe for you both to grow? I feel like the collective is, at least from what I see, is on that realm. Especially with the women that I coach, my own self. I did a live on like unpacking the five love languages. And another hypothesis that I have is that men, I believe like their love language is starting to be a lot more words of affirmation. Cause if we actually think about it, I don't want to say always, but like the men that I talk to, because I still work with men individually, in therapy realm, but they're like, what I really want is peace and respect. Mm-hmm. And then what I've noticed, and I've definitely been in like data land, I'm like, oh wow, the way their wife or their girlfriend or their partner speaks to them matters. Like our words matter. And so just knowing that part, and I bring the rupture together, and I know this is just for a heterosexual relationship, if let's just say female says something, does something, and then she's able to make amends and be like, you know what, baby, I am so sorry. Or I apologize. That sounded really harsh. Or whatever the case may be, I feel like then he is like more receptive. And it's kind of like, thank you for acknowledging that. And then it's this beautiful harmony that can happen versus, let's just say, getting in a stuck point of like, well, I know I shouldn't have said it that way, but he needs to get over it because he's being sensitive or whatever the case may be. So
I think like from my perspective as well, and you know this better than me, but I think that takes, yes, the self-awareness piece, the conscious awareness piece, but also lots of practice. I remember when I came into my current relationship, we've been together nearly 3 years now, but I promised myself, you know, you do the work for your relationships. And I'd been into personal development. I've gone to therapy myself. And I was like, you need to do the work where you are able to get to that point where you are self-aware. But the biggest thing you can do is actually practice it. And I think that this links, I'm going to go back and forth a little bit, but I think it was a thread over the weekend and it said something that, you know, the best work, and I completely agree with this, is maybe it was actually Alex Hormozi who said this, but I think he said, you can read all the books, listen to all of that, but he's like, you just need to start doing the work. You just need to start practicing. And I think that was one of the biggest things for me is, you know, I did so much development of understanding my own attachment style, my own love languages, the own way that I reacted in and taken self-responsibility for my past relationships. But I was like, I can think about all of this and I can think it sounds great, but I just need to practice. And I found that has been one of the most rewarding yet difficult things in my current relationship, because it's rewarding because of the outcome, but it's difficult because it hurts my ego. And it's like, wow, I am not used to this. I know that I'm in the wrong, but you're right. Being able to sit there and be like, you know what? I'm sorry. This is my responsibility to take right now. It's hard. And it goes back to what we were saying before, but also I want to link this to what you said about, you know, one of the number one thread is the inability to repair because of the resentment piece. And if I look back on my old relationships, there was so much resentment. And, you know, when you said the stat between 3 to 5 years, then couples are like, all right, let's get help. That is wild to me, because that's a lot of resentment to hold in your heart space. And then to be able to, like, I just want to understand this a bit more. Let's say a couple comes to you 5 years, after 5 years, they both have so much resentment. Where do you even start with that? Because to me, I imagine 5 years of resentment, that's a lot of resentment to be holding in your body and in your mind.
Yeah, it is a lot. It is a lot. Where do we start? That's sometimes with some couples, the basics, because they don't have they aren't in tune with their mind and body. So they're not in tune with what they say impacts their partner. They're not, aware of just like their own emotions. So sometimes it's like starting from the basics there. Sometimes it's starting from, I like to call this like putting out little fires so that we can actually get to the stuff, right? And so it's like it's a lot. It's fun and it's great and it's a hard work. And the couples that I've had the opportunity to work with, this is where I'm like, let me say, I say this to them. I have a session where I work with them together. I'm like, give me all, like, let it all out. I want to know everything that is in your mind right now. And then I have two individual sessions with them and then bring them together. And I find it for me as well as them, I do a pathway. Like, where are we going? Let's do a check-in here. So I try to break it up, or I do break it up in bite-sized pieces. To me, clinically, that's beneficial. For them, I feel like it's beneficial. So then we can see like, all right, we've been working on this. We've gotten this far. Let's take a break. Let's put into practice. Like, yes, there's still things to work on, but like, let's build this foundation. And so I'm like, 3 to 5 years, you hit it on the head when it's like the resentment, there's just so much and it's unraveling it.
Have you had many couples that come to you and then by the end of however long they work with you, they're like, actually, this relationship is not for us. It's time to part our ways. Yeah. Yep.
Yes.
Is it more of a loving realization, or do you think it's more of a like an angry realization, if that makes sense?
It depends on where they are at. If I had to say on average, it's a loving one, because the goal was to save the marriage, and then in like through therapy, realizing this is not the individual that I want to be with, need to be with. And I'm smiling because I was like, I right now have a few couples who are like, we know that we initially hired you to help us with our marriage. Can you help us through our divorce? And that actually has been so rewarding, because then, especially when they have kiddos, because there's a level of mutual respect that happens. There's a level of knowing of, I don't need to get my needs met by this individual, but I can show up and respect them and co-parent with them. We can agree on this part. And so, it's a beautiful thing when it happens.
That's insane. People come to you for marriage and then they're like, can you actually coach us through, be a therapist for our divorce, but like in such a loving way, and like the co-parenting. Yeah. And that must be really rewarding for you to see that, okay, their relationship hasn't worked, but they're going to make this type of relationship work.
Right, right. And then with some therapists self-disclose, some don't. I don't mind, especially in the coaching realm, I had to get really used to that of sharing parts of my life. But with my clients that have done that, it is rewarding, because I get to also share my own personal experience of like being married, going through a divorce. And my daughter's dad and I, we have a pretty good co-parenting relationship. I also have had to do a lot of work around my own self, right, with my own therapy, around letting some of that hurt go, moving through it, learning how to continue to show up for me, soothing those thoughts of like, oh my gosh, I'm a horrible person, or how could I, you know? And so remembering too that I'm human, and at the end of the day, I want to be the woman that I want to be. And a divorce doesn't define or have a play on my worth, but going back to our worth thing, like, I only measure myself to myself. So, it's definitely so many beautiful paths that can come from us being aware of who we are, and that we have the ability to, if we choose, we can have the ability to sit in developing a better relationship with ourselves. So,
do you love what you do as much as when you first started? And is the excitement and the curiosity still there?
It is. I feel like I love it even more now. I love it even more in the sense of going from agency work where you see clients back to back to back. I was burnt out, right? And so now that I've shifted my own, not that every therapist needs to do this, but for me, I shifted to where I have clients, but then I went to the coaching realm too. But I just see that I am able to express myself. I'm able to be creative. I can do things like a podcast, and meet other like amazing women. I even have like a free Facebook group where that's where I was saying like I go live and give information, but I feel I know I am whole and I have so much more to give. And so this has been, I feel like I'm just at the beginning of something great. But yeah, I love it.
I
I
love
love
that.
it.
That's beautiful. For the women listening that are like, I want that feeling of wholeness. What are the things you do daily or on a weekly, let's say 2 to 4 things that you do for yourself or that help you tap into you and your self-worth and your self-love that are non-negotiables?
My non-negotiables is one, sleep.
Yes. Yes.
I prioritize my sleep. I am a girly who, if I get 7 to 8 hours, I thrive. Anything less than that, it takes me a lot more mental energy to show up as the person that I want to be. So I prioritize sleep. I also, my kiddos are older, so I'm not having a night train and things like that, but I prioritize sleep. I actually plan out what I want to do and like brain dumping before I go to bed. Not all the time. So I don't want to say that I do all the time, but when I am feeling stressed or there's a lot to do before I go to bed, I have my notebook and I plan out my day the following day. Like wake up in the morning, call this person, do whatever. And I find that it helps me stay on track. And I am definitely after those dopamine hits when I put the check mark on. So that's like another non-negotiable. Music. I've also noticed like I will try to have at least some uplifting positive music or different hertz, like frequencies when I'm working. If I notice that, I woke up on the wrong side of the bed, I'm just feeling a little, right? I'll honor that. And so I don't try to like pump myself up, but maybe I'll put on some like mellow type music that's not going to be like too depressy, but it just supports where I'm at. And I, if I had my list, I do half of that. And I'm like, good job, Malika. Like, good job for accomplishing that. When are you going to do the next task? And so those are the only ones I can think of
I
off the top of my
love those. The music one, I agree so much, especially when I sit down at this desk and I've woken up and I'm like, oh, can't be bothered today. I will put on some type of frequency to like get me into the vibration and just help. And before I know it, I've done an hour of work and I'm like, wow, I actually feel really good in my body.
Yeah.
Let's put on some Justin Bieber now. And I can sing that out loud. So I love that.
Yes.
I love that. I have a question that I always ask. Well, I have a few questions that I
Okay.
ask before we end the podcast. And I was just looking, I was like, which one do I want to ask you? And I'm going to ask you this one. Imagine you can send a message to your future self. What would you want to remind or tell yourself?
To my future self.
Future self. Let's say you're 80-year-old Malika.
Oh, so my 80-year-old Malika, I would maybe say to her, thank you.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's
I would say, like,
beautiful.
thank you. Now I'm all getting emotional. I'm like, man, because at 80, I can only imagine, like, she's done live one hell of a life.
Yes. Yes. I absolutely love that. That's a beautiful answer. Where can everyone find you, inquire to work with you? What's your best point of contact? Everything will be in the show notes, but just to give everyone an
Okay.
overview.
Yeah, the best way I would say would be Instagram or Facebook. I've been checking those a lot more as of late. And so it's at Malika Wiley for both of those. And that's where we can get connected, see if our vibes are vibing together, but you know, and learning. So, and I love connecting with other women and men and, you know, the plethora of individuals. But yeah.
I love that. And I appreciate you so much for coming on to the podcast. This was an incredible conversation. I'm so
Thank
excited for
you.
everyone to listen to it.
Thank you.
Thank you.